Welcome to this special edition of the New Stack Makers on the Road from MongoDB World 2022 in New York City. Discussions from the show floor with technologists giving you their expertise and insights to help you with your everyday work. Headquartered in New York, MongoDB is the leading modern general-purpose database platform designed to unleash the power of software and data for developers and the applications they build.
Hey everyone, Alex Williams, the New Stack here at MongoDB World in New York City. And we are now talking about modern tools, how they're used, what makes them flexible, what makes them work. And joining me is Peggy Races, Senior Director, Developer Experience at Apollo GraphQL. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, it's so great to be here.
Thank you for joining us. And Lee Robinson, Vice President of Developer Experience at Vercel. Nice to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We were talking about media tools and how media tools are used with learning about the tools themselves. I'm curious about some of the things you've learned about the tools that you use in your everyday work. And how does that affect the way you think about how you discuss them and how you use them and how you communicate about them? Because I know that using media tools, you want to make it as easy as possible, right? So I'm just curious from that perspective, Peggy, you know, what are some of the insights that you've learned over the years in using media tools with tools that you're talking about with developers?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I think about like what creates an amazing developer experience, it's that those little moments of joy as you're learning and building and creating and shipping to production. And so whether it's the content creation tools that we're using as developer advocates or the tools that we're using to build our websites and demos and different properties, it's all about those little amazing moments of joy. And I think that's really what we try to do at Apollo, is create those moments of joy for developers so they're not sitting there toiling or, you know, waiting on CI builds or waiting on back-end changes. It's all about just tapping them into their flow state and helping them ultimately be more productive.
Yeah, there's something to be said too with Apollo. Like when you stitch together your graph of services, it really unblocks those developers to create, because now they don't have to go find where's that microservice at or where's that other piece of my system. It's just like, hey, it's in your graph.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So Peggy, you work for Apollo, and Apollo, tell us a little bit about Apollo's mission.
Yeah, absolutely. So our overall mission is to help developers help the world. And the way that we do that is by helping them build a supergraph. And so a supergraph is a unified network of a company's data, services, and capabilities. And we bring that into one consistent and discoverable place that any developer can access with a GraphQL query. And what's really great about the supergraph is even though it's unified, it's very modular and incrementally adoptable. So you don't have to like rewrite all of your backend system and APIs. What's really great about the supergraph is you can connect like your legacy infrastructure, like your relational databases, and connect that to a more modern stack like MongoDB Atlas, for example, or even connect it to a mainframe as we've seen with some of our customers. And it brings that together in one place that can evolve over time. And we found that it just makes developers so much more productive, helps them shave months off of their development time and create experiences that weren't possible before.
And for those who aren't familiar with Vercel, maybe you could tell us a little bit about the company.
Yeah, absolutely. Vercel is a platform for front-end developers, really trying to take you from idea to global application in seconds. So it's specifically curated for the front-end developers of the world. And we're also the creators of a framework called Next.js, which is the most popular React framework that gives you the tools and the production defaults to make a fast web experience. We really believe we want it to be fast, easy, scalable for people to build web applications. And to do that, we have to empower these developers with the tools to build on the web. And for the longest time, the front-end wasn't getting the innovation that it needed and the tools. And then with companies like Apollo also like pairing to build this experience together, I think it's really ushered in a new era of developer productivity and developer experience.
There's so much that I want to ask about this, because we could talk about GraphQL. Maybe that is just a good place to start.
Yeah.
Because GraphQL does serve as an underpinning. How does GraphQL serve as a way, not just as to be that super graph, providing that enablement, but what else does it provide? You know, I grew up as an enterprise writer writing about RESTful APIs, right? And over time, you know, RESTful APIs became so important. And what's the importance of GraphQL to you and your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So like in its simplest terms, GraphQL is a query language for communicating about data. And it allows the client developers to ask for exactly what they need. It's also a very client-driven way of designing APIs. Previously with REST, it was very back-end driven, right? And client developers would have to do a ton of data transformation and write all this data plumbing code on the front end in order to ship their apps. So it actually allows you to decouple front-end and back-end development by creating a schema, and it's kind of like a menu of all of your available data. What's really amazing is that it encourages collaboration between front-end and back-end teams, because when you agree on that data model up front, then the front-end teams can mock that out and build their applications against it. The back-end developers can connect that schema to the underlying data sources, whatever that may be, and then it allows them to just be that much more productive. So another kind of like interesting point that you brought up was just like GraphQL and REST. And I think like a lot of times we see these articles like GraphQL versus REST, and it feels like it has to be one or the other, or like I need to rewrite all my APIs, but that's not what it is at all, right? GraphQL actually works as a layer over REST and can be really effective that way. And it's a really easy way for folks to get started, is just create a small schema, maybe connect that to one endpoint, and then connect that to a client. You can do that like within 15 minutes. So yeah, I think GraphQL works as a layer over REST. It allows you to adopt it incrementally. And I think it's kind of where we see the future of the data layer.
And when I talk to front-end developers too, when they're using modern frameworks, whether it's Next.js or SvelteKit or Nuxt, they have this abstraction layer between their backend, their GraphQL API, their REST APIs, that serves as this connecting layer between, you know, maybe a backend team, maybe a frontend team. Maybe they're connecting together a series of different APIs into one service or one super graph.
Yeah.
And it gives this nice clean separation of concerns, where the frontend team can be empowered to pick the best tools and the best workflow for their teams, and the same with the backend teams as well.
But the tools have to fit into that framework, don't they? They have to fit into that those environments. And so there's tools that work and tools that don't work. I mean, so what are some of your experiences in learning about the tools that work and don't work when you're thinking about just trying to make it easier using a service like GraphQL?
Yeah, I think that for me, when I'm evaluating tools, I know we probably share a lot of the same philosophies for evaluating developer experience, but a couple things that I really believe strongly in is the importance of having really good defaults, strong defaults, but having it be extensible and available for developers to not necessarily eject fully out of the tool that you're using, but be able to customize without having to leave the framework library tool of choice. If you can provide that great experience for the 90% use case by default, but still allow maybe the extra 10% power developer who needs to modify something without having to just rewrite from scratch, you can go pretty far.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point about strong defaults. Like a great developer experience is when you don't have to make a lot of decisions up front. You can just immediately start playing around. It feels intuitive. You're tapping into that flow state and you're getting to building right away. You don't want to waste a lot of time with like configuration or rewriting your old code. You just want to be able to like hook it up in a very flexible and modular way with like sensible defaults.
Yeah.
I could talk for hours with the two of you, but I think we have to get on to our next interview, who we're going to be speaking with, Soren Brammer Schmidt, CEO at Prisma, and Ian Massingham, Vice President of Developer Relations at MongoDB. But I'm going to carry this conversation we had into the next part of this discussion. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having us. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, now we're back for more interviews to talk about developer tools and their productivity and what makes them modern and what makes them awesome. And Ian was saying, this kind of feels like I'm a sportscaster. You know, we could say that there's an F1 race out there or something like that. But more seriously, I'm with Ian Massingham, Vice President of Developer Relations and Community at MongoDB. Thank you so much joining
Great
us,
Great to
Ian.
Be here.
And I'm also here with Soren Brammer-Schmidt, the CEO at Prisma. So great to have you both here. We had just talked with Peggy Racis and Lee Robinson. Peggy's with Apollo GraphQL, and Lee is with Vercel. Now, we're talking about product development a lot, but we're also talking about the data. You know, and I'm curious about, what is that experience that you're looking for when it comes to data? One thing someone said to me a long time ago, back in the OpenStack days, is they said what AWS did was they kind of like, in what cloud services architects at the beginning, is they separated the storage. And that did create some problems. It created a little bit of a complexity there of like, how do you attach the storage, right? How do you think about the storage as part of it? Now, developers don't even talk necessarily about storage. They talk about the data, right? How is that concept really embodied in the tools that you see being used, that you're using yourself? I think of Mongo, for instance, and I'd be curious, you know, from your point of view, you know, how you view that now.
Yeah, so we're really trying to help developers manipulate and work with data in a more productive and effective way over here at MongoDB. One of the ways we do this is through the provision of first-party drivers. So we have 12 different programming language drivers for MongoDB, covering everything from Rust to Java, JavaScript, Python,
programming C. Languages.
Yeah, so as a developer, you're importing our library into your environment, and then rather than having to construct convoluted SQL statements, essentially learning another language to interact with the data in your database or data store, you're going to manipulate data idiomatically using objects or whatever other constructs are normal within the programming language that you're using. It just makes it way simpler for developers to interact with the data that's stored in MongoDB versus interacting with data in a relational database. So that's one component. And then the second thing you talked about is, you know, physical storage of the data. In our managed service, MongoDB Atlas, we actually allow for either network-attached storage using the primitives that are present inside these hyperscale cloud providers. You talked about AWS there, so this would be EBS volumes in their case. But also, if you've got really extreme performance requirements, you can use these NVRAM solid-state storage devices directly inside the instance, about 100 times faster than going out over a network to a block device. So depending on what your performance characteristics are, you can sort of tune in additional performance units using that local storage to really make your application super fast. So it's kind of two sides of the question that you asked, really.
Yeah, interesting. Soren, how about you? What's your thought on that?
I think a truism in software engineering is that code moves fast and data moves slow.
Yeah.
So in the past, we've seen a lot of innovation in libraries and tooling for developers when they write code that increases their developer experience. But we've seen a lot less innovation in data tooling because it's a lot harder. It's really important to not make mistakes, to not lose data. But now we are starting to see more innovation around the data tooling space, and Mongo is a great example of that. Mongo is a database that is much nicer to use for a developer. You can express more different data constructs, and Mongo will kind of handle things under the hood. Prisma is in that same category. We are innovating around the developer experience for working with data, making it easier for developers to build applications that rely on data and do that faster.
So I'm a journalist, and you know, in the modern era that we're in, compared to when I worked for newspapers, right? That's our legacy, right? Is
yeah.
Print, right? You know, I would sit at a terminal, and it was like working on a block of concrete almost, right? And it was all set up with a mainframe, and you know, and then it went to the printing presses and everything else. And I think there's a kind of a corollary to legacy architectures too, in many ways, right? And today, in many respects, the work that the developer does, he or she are working in invisible environments, right? And, you know, it's a very much of an invisible environment. Podcasting and video production changes it a bit because now you actually have equipment right in front of you, right? And so I can start to tell what are the telltale signs of modern tools, very simply by my experience. I'm curious for you and your perspectives, what are the telltale signs of tools that don't work, that are not really fitting with what you do? And how do you think about them? Because there's still ways that you might want to use them, right? And so I'm curious on that, because that seems to be such a big part of what you do, is helping the developer get a grasp on the tools and getting a sense of the tools and knowing what are the best tools to use and what are not. But in sometimes there are these outside use cases.
I think a common telltale sign is that as a developer, you don't really feel confidence in what you're doing. You don't have a good overview of the system. You don't feel like you can make a change and rely on that just working. So when you're in a situation like that, you create other workflows that are outside the day-to-day work to try to manage all of that. So if you think of a modern system, like Google Docs, for example, you can edit stuff in Google Docs, you can share it with other people, you can edit together, and you know that it just syncs and works. And compare that to the old system of sending around Word files.
Versioning
you,
it.
You yeah. need to manage all of that yourself, right? And that is a situation where you don't feel confidence. And many legacy enterprise systems, software systems, feel like that. When you're a developer, you are trying to make a change, you don't know if that's going to break things.
Such a good analogy, because you know the other thing that Google Docs has got is continuous version history, as you just said. If you make a mistake or somebody does something to your document that you don't, you know, exactly like, you can roll back to that prior version, recover your previous copy, and
you feel confident.
Reinsert it, and you feel completely confident that it will always be there, right? There's so many parallels between that workflow and that mindset and modern software build and deployment tools, where you know with our CTO here at MongoDB, Mark Porter, talks quite a lot about safe deployment as an important practice area. And in the same way that Google Docs provides a safety net for someone messing with your doc, these tools provide a safety net for that one time when your deployment goes wrong. You can quickly get back to a prior version, restore service, and make sure that your customers and users are happy again. So that'll make a developer feel like, you know, yeah, I'm in a safe environment where I'm not going to break the system. Really, really important for people's well-being, in my opinion.
So the way we do that in Prisma is we have the tooling introspect your database. It will go and sample documents in MongoDB and then generate a schema based on that. And then it will pull that information into your development environment, such that you can, when you write queries, you will get auto-completion. The IDE will tell you if you're making a mistake. You will have that confidence in your environment instead of having to look at the documentation, try to remember what fields are where, how to do things. So that is increasing the confidence of the developer, enabling to move faster.
So those are hallmarks of tools that you build, then it has to be. How do you learn about your own tools and what you need to do to improve them by studying other tools? And the study can come in like building demos or writing about it or trying to communicate with it. Tell me about kind of how you work through that process yourselves to help bring self-improvement by talking about the tools that you use.
I think the number one technique that we use at MongoDB is talking to and listening to developers that are actively using our products and services today. And we have obviously a product management team, engineering team that are really heavily embedded in listening to our existing and prospective customers.
Listening is a very abstract term, right? So, like, what do you mean by that? Well, like, how do you listen? Like, what are the ways, what are the operations that you've built into your organization to enable that listening?
So we have a customer advocacy program called MongoDB Champions, which is, you know, kind of similar to what Microsoft do with MVP or AWS do with their Heroes program. These are our most passionate and vocal customer advocates. We have regular syncs with that community of users. Then we're, of course, heavily embedded inside our largest customers as well, with our account teams, our account managers, and our support staff, listening to successes and challenges that those customers observe every day and try to figure out how we can better support them. And actually, we've done this kind of work with Prisma as well. We can talk a little bit about how we supported you in getting the MongoDB integration built for Prisma. That might be a good example.
Yeah, indeed. So Prisma has been around for a while, and we support a number of databases. For a long time, we did not support Mongo, and lots and lots of developers were coming to us and saying, hey, you need to support MongoDB. We want to use Mongo. So we've worked with the team over the last year and a half to build a connector for Prisma for MongoDB. And we had outstanding support from the team. They built a Rust driver that we needed to our requirements. They really worked with us in designing our API such that it feels like Mongo. It is native, but has all the benefits of Prisma. Yeah, we've been really happy with that process.
Rust, you bring up Rust, which is an interesting topic. It's had such growth, and I think it comes down to the safety of it in many ways, right? But is it too safe? I mean, is it too much? I mean, this is just a curiosity I have.
it's about confidence again. When you use Rust, it might be a little bit more annoying, but when you make something work, you're confident about it because you have the type system. And other languages have type systems too, like Java has a type system that can be annoying, but it doesn't help you that much. You can still make typing mistakes in Java that you cannot make in Rust. Rust is much more strict and you feel much more confident.
So just in conclusion, Ian, I'm curious, and all this listening, all this learning, talking to MVP, how do you then bring that back into your own tool development so you can create that modern, flexible experience?
Yeah, so that's a case of prioritizing those different needs that we hear from customers through a product management process that we have. So it's kind of manual, I would say, and it's about having the right expertise within the team at MongoDB, and I think we're really lucky to have that. I would say on the driver's side particularly, I think we're unique in that we don't port our drivers between different programming languages. Each one of our drivers, our 12 different drivers, our first-party drivers, is written natively in whichever programming language it's intended to support by a dedicated team of developers that work solely on that specific driver. So, and I think that's one of the reasons that we've cracked this kind of idiomatic native feel, because we're not having, you know, a Java developer writing a driver for Python kind of on the side. Our driver teams are much more focused on the developer experience for the specific language that they're creating products for, which does work very well. And we do have a lot of positive feedback from customers about the driver experience as a result.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us here at MongoDB World in New York City. We've been joined by Ian Mossingham, Vice President of Developer Relations and Community at MongoDB, and Soren Brom-Schmidt, he's CEO at Prisma. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you for having us. It was great.
Headquartered in New York, MongoDB is the leading modern general-purpose database platform designed to unleash the power of software and data for developers and the applications they build.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe on Simplecast to listen to more episodes on the new Stack Makers. Create and share your favorite audiogram using our Simplecast player. For more articles and great stories, go to thenewstack.io.